All right. All of you good, wonderful citizens of Crip Nation. Hope you guys are having a fantastic week. A lot of volatility in the market. I'm excited. There's a lot to break down. Brendan is out. He's enjoying a week off. He's camping or he's completely off the grid. I actually don't even know where the hell he is. But that's not important. What's important is I'm joined by our super producer, TiVo. TiVo, how are you doing, my man?
Doing good. Doing good as always. Excited to be here. I believe Brendan is in the Bahamas.
So
I
think okay.
He's enjoying some nice nice weather, turquoise blue water, and hopefully a good time.
Yeah, I love it. Actually, my in-laws are in the Bahamas right now. It'd be crazy if they crossed paths.
Place to be.
It's the place to be. TiVo, Bitcoin above 50K. Bitcoin below 50K. Bitcoin back above. Bitcoin back below. I mean, it's a pretty crazy market, and things are really being dictated by these ETF flows. I mean, you've seen these charts, right? Like Eric Balkanis, he's sharing them. James Seifert, Matt Hogan is you know, obviously CIO of Bitwise. He's been on the show a bunch of times, and he's really elucidating this entire thing for me. And I'm like blown away by some of the statistics. We got it pulled up right here. After 1 month, four of the 25 fastest growing ETFs, not just of this year, not of just the past five, of all time, are spot Bitcoin ETFs. And these things have been trading for about, 30 days, right? They launched on January 11th and whatever. It's February 13th. We're recording this. And so it's been just about 30 days. And there's some enormous stats that we're seeing here. One thing that I wanted to talk about was the fact that actually the Bitcoin ETFs, the IBIT and the FBTC, we'll talk about these, which is BlackRock's and Fidelity's.
Have you ever wanted to trade Bitcoin but haven't dared tried? With Plus 500 Futures, you can trade crypto without the hassle of opening a wallet. With just a few clicks, you can register and start practicing with their free and unlimited demo. See a trading opportunity? You'll be able to trade in just two clicks. Feel ready? You can move to real money with as little as $100 once your account is approved. And the great thing is that in addition to crypto, Plus 500 gives you access to a wide range of instruments like the S&P 500, NASDAQ, gas, and much more. Explore equity indices like energy, metals, Forex, and beyond. With a simple and intuitive platform, you can trade anytime, anywhere. Experience the fast, accessible futures trading you've been waiting for with Plus 500. With over 20 years of experience, Plus 500 is your gateway to the markets. Visit us.plus500.com to learn more. Trading in futures involves risk of loss and is not suitable for everyone. Not all applicants will qualify, and this is not personal financial advice. Plus 500, it's trading with a plus.
They've already got, IBIT has about $4 billion in the first 30 days. Fidelity's spot Bitcoin ETF, I think it was about $3.5 billion in the first 30 days. There's, out of the 5,500 US ETFs to ever launch, no ETF has ever, and I repeat, ever within the first 30 days gotten above $3 billion of inflows or assets under management. And we have two already within the first 30 days that just smashed that record. So for anybody who's out there that's saying, this has been a failed ETF, Bitcoin's still, $50,000 or whatever, they're just dead wrong. They're just dead wrong. There's no way you can rationalize that when it's smashing these records. Now, there's a lot of people talking about Grayscale and, okay, well, Grayscale's been selling and, it's down 25% of its AUM. But a lot of that AUM went from Grayscale into other Bitcoin ETFs. And like we mentioned, Bitwise is kind of the fourth leader here. And I forget who's the other third one. ARK Invest, Kathy Wood's fund. Now, these two both have about $1 billion of assets within the first 30 days as well. So this has been a smashing success. We've got now just the spigot turned on, right? The water spigot's turned on. There's passive inflows coming from institutional investors who have never really, been buying Bitcoin in the past. Now they're all able to get access to Bitcoin.
To build off these wild stats, not to cut you off, sorry, but I wanted to build off these wild stats. So this was one thing, Matt Hogan's been firing his Twitter's unbelievable recently, But he was saying today that he actually was noticing that there are a lot of people selling GBTC and going into the lower fee funds. But he's also, he said, you'd be surprised of how much inorganic new buyers that there are as well. Mm. And just to go off those steroid padded stats that you just did, here's a chart here that we're showing. And this is percentage days of inflows. So FBTC, Fidelity, and IBIT have had 100% of all the days that they've been live. Like, this chart was from yesterday.
That's ludicrous.
So 100, yeah. So every day there's been inflows. And you can see there, you know, the percentage of days with inflows, 100, 100. And then the next closest is 15 for, like, setting a record. You got 90 and other pro shares, Bitcoin Strat ETF. So, I mean, these stats are kind of mind-boggling. Like,
they really
setting
are.
It's like they're record-setting stuff.
They're record-setting. I'm going to show you a quick chart here as well. So here's a quick screenshot here of the ETF flows as of yesterday. So you can see all this black right down here. This is all like outflows from the GBTC investment trust fund, which has a 1.5% management fee annually. Whereas all these other colorful ones on top have like a 0.2% management fee. So, you know, several factors, you know, cheaper. And you could see, you know, really quite a tug of war between inflows and outflows on some of these ETFs. But you could see this is just diminishing. I mean, as a momentum chart, like if you take, you know, if you look at like something like an oscillator or whatever, I mean, this is the selling momentum is declining. Right. You have less sell pressure. In fact, now, you know, over here on the right hand side of the chart, you know, the net purchases are way, way, way more significant than any of the net selling. So the Bitcoin ETF flows, you could see like why the first half of January was really choppy. Right. You could see just like, you know, there was a tug of war. So Bitcoin hit 50K, then it came back down to like 38K. And there was a big trading range that was set. But now you could see Bitcoin you know, trading a, you know, around $50,000 again on the back of like, you know, just very little sell pressure. So it's pretty interesting what's going on with the Bitcoin ETF flows, but that's just kind of one aspect of what's pushing and pulling the market. TiVo, what else have you kind of seen that's trending on social media or just been getting a lot of buzz?
Well, I spoke to my uncle, who not a crypto guy, is a big finance guy. He's a he is a CFO of a smaller company, but is publicly listed. And we're just chopping it up, and he's like, "How's work going?" And he's like, "But been hearing a lot of Bitcoin noise." He's like, "So, you know, what do you know about GBTC?" So he brought that up because the ads, I'm seeing them everywhere. He's like, "Is that, if I want exposure, should I buy that?" And then I broke down, well, you know, that's an option. Here's what's going on with all the fees and all the options. And, you know, kind of we had a good conversation about it. But I thought that was interesting because he's the perfect candidate of somebody who's in finance, traditional finance guy, very smart. And he's starting, you know, he's hearing the buzz and then he's catching the ads. And obviously GBTC, if you watch CNBC, is just, I think they're every other commercial break they have a quick ad.
Yeah. Anytime you walk through the airport. Anytime you walk through an airport, you see GBTC like plastered on the walls, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
They've done a great job marketing.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And so did Bitwise did before it got. So I guess they knew, but like, you know, the week before was when the most interesting man in the world commercial, the Dos Equis guy. So it's like Matt Hogan's there cheering with the Dos Equis guys. That was great. But they haven't rebooted that. I thought they might keep playing that after it got approved, but we'll see.
Yeah.
But something that I saw Matt brought up.
Matt was speaking at one of the really big ETF conferences, along with all these guys we've been talking about. They're all there. And something that, you know, I saw on Twitter that he said on stage was that he's expecting like a big second wave of inflows. And he's justifying this big second wave of inflows actually because a lot of the national sort of advisors, these financial advisors, these brokerage firms, all this kind of stuff, a lot of times they require, in order for them to offer an ETF to their customers, they require that ETF to be trading for like 3 months, to have a little bit of a track record, all that kind of stuff, right? And so many of these firms, these financial advisors, aren't even able, like by their bylaws, even able to offer any of these Bitcoin ETFs. But within a few months, they will be. So, you know, there's kind of potentially maybe a little bit of a lull in the market right? You know, I mean, obviously Bitcoin's been crazy, but you know, we might see a little bit of a lull. He might be saying going forward, as you know, can we really keep up? You know, $500 billion a day, or sorry, $500 million a day of net inflows to these things. You know, at some point maybe that fades out, but there's going to be a second wave of a new kind of universe of market participants kind of being open. So I thought that was pretty fascinating, just to think, like, you know, we've kind of just cracked open the jar, but we haven't even taken the lid off, if that makes sense.
No, for sure. And like you said, what am I seeing? So there's an interesting divergence going on. And so here's our next two topics, but they actually relate really well. One is the crypto economy is humming. So you sent me, we're going to pull up a couple charts here. You sent me something and I found something else. And then the divergence is Google search, you know, the traditional retail people are not searching for Bitcoin. So we'll do that second. Right. We'll do that second. The people that are in the economy that know and love it, that have been here through the bear market, the activity is at an all-time high. So let me show you this one, Bryce. This one is one that I found, and then we'll go to the one that you found. So this is another Matt Hogan gem. And he said,
"Should we just call this the Matt Hogan episode?"
It is the Matt Hogan episode, and this is gonna make me reach out. I'm gonna reach out and
it's kind of his world, and we're just back on right now.
100%. We had a James Safar phase, and then now we're in the Matt Hogan phase. So we gotta get Matt back on. Yeah. But I mean, just look at this chart. So it's stable coin usage compared to PayPal, Visa, Fed Wire, remittances, and ACH, and just 2016 to present day. And all the traditional ones, I mean, you get PayPal would be least traditional, but you know, still PayPal's been around for a long time now. And compared to stablecoin usage, and stablecoin usage has surpassed PayPal and surpassed remittances and is just below Visa.
That's incredible.
And as we know from talking to Solana, Visa's starting to test out using Solana itself.
Absolutely.
So I thought that was fascinating.
And take note real quick before you exit out, take note of who shared that originally was Morgan Stanley. You know, this is an incumbent bank. They're kind of inclined to not want to share this kind of information because they don't own the stablecoin market. But like, you can't fight the facts and figures. Stablecoins are an incredibly quickly growing technology. It's just so much easier. I mean, to send somebody a stable coin as opposed to, you know, requesting wire information and all that kind of stuff. So it is a whole beast, and I'm really excited about what's going on. But if you click over to the chart from Jamie Coates, really, really smart analyst, I believe a Bloomberg analyst. Don't quote me on that. Click his name here. Is he Bloomberg?
Pragmatic.
Yeah, Bloomberg Intelligence. Okay,
yeah,
right.
Bloomberg Intelligence.
Okay, cool. And so, yeah, that's kind of the same firm that James was working at. But you could see here 55% increase in daily active users on smart contract platforms. That is from over the past 12 months, right? So in the past year, not only have prices rallied, but you see an increasing amount of daily active users. That's just, you know, we don't need to spend too much time on this. That's just a great stat. You know, that's just something you want to have in your back pocket for people saying, oh, well, you know, people aren't developing on smart contracts. People aren't using this crap, da, 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 da. Hey, this is up 55% in the last 12 months. And, you know, if you take a look at some of the smaller platforms, you know, the growth is even more significant. So really excited about that. Just, you know, in order to have kind of a sustained bull market, you got to have users.
No, 100%. And that is why the next flowing into the next topic is, you know, I'm a big fan of the Google search term, you know, percentage of, you know, not downloads, but searches. And for the first time,
like, how many people are searching for the word Bitcoin on Google, basically, and it's tracking that?
Yeah, Bitcoin, crypto, exactly. And so you would think, as, you know, we approach the ETF, it would go up, and it did. And then, you know, now that we're approaching 50K, and, you know, I mean, dare I say it, all-time highs are within sight. And what doesn't add up is the divergence. So here's a chart here of correlating Bitcoin search on Google and price. And as you can see, obviously the price or the Google search term skyrocketed here in 2018 compared to price. But for the most part, I mean, you could say, I mean, I don't want to speak for you, but would you say that looks pretty correlated for the most part from 18 to 21?
Absolutely.
And, you know, and then
big correlation.
Go ahead.
No, I was agreeing. Big correlation.
So then it drops off with the price in 22, and, you know, we're in the bear market. And I just, what you're seeing here at the end there is this price, I don't want to say skyrocketing, but a steady incline and then a sharp jump from 30 to 50. And then that correlates with the ETF. So you're seeing all the Bitcoin searches, Bitcoin ETF, that goes, and search just drops off. Price stays and keeps going higher.
Yeah, so Yassine Alamandra, who's from ARK, who launched one of these Bitcoin ETFs, very, very smart investor, and points this out, which is really interesting. And I think, like, we could be, just like with these institutional ETFs, we could just be in a completely different sort of market. Like your uncle, or like these, you know, big sort of finance people, they're not like Googling Bitcoin anymore. Like, everybody pretty much knows the word Bitcoin. People aren't like really asking what it is that much anymore. I think it's pretty well like grokked or really well sussed out. And so I think just like maybe this sort of correlation, or maybe this sort of indication, has like some level of like entropy to it, or like it breaks down over time. Like, it's not actually carrying as much weight now as it did in the past. Because in the past, it was a retail-driven market. It was me. It was you. It was all these, you know, crazy, you know, kids with nothing but a few bucks and a dream, you know, punting it on Bitcoin. And, you know, everybody's Googling it and you know, telling their friends about it. You know, just go look it up. And now it's like, all right, we got commercials, you know, on national television. We've got BlackRock and Larry Fink going on CNBC, you know, telling everybody what Bitcoin is. So I think, you know, this just has a little bit of entropy behind it, and it might not carry that much weight. And so it is a really interesting sign that retail is not here yet. Because once that, like, guarantee retail's the people that are Googling, you know, what is Bitcoin, all that kind of stuff. So once you see that start to pick up, I mean, you're going to see even more momentum. But, you know, right now there's not a lot of euphoria. I have not gotten a single, and I'm not exaggerating, I'm very honest here, I've not got a single text from any one of my friends, like, hey, Bitcoin's back at 50K, or, you know, my in-laws aren't calling me like they typically do, like when Bitcoin has these big moves and all this kind of stuff. It's been pretty, you know, calm, you know? And I think that's a good indication. Like, typically when all your friends are calling you and, you know, asking what altcoins to buy, that typically ends up being a top signal. I just haven't had any of those sentiment sort of reads on my close circle. What about you?
Basically, My closer cousins and people that I talk to all the time know that I work in it, so they ask questions. But yeah, no random ones. Yeah. So yeah, I'm 100% agree with you, and I agree with your point. I did see some people on the timeline, kind of say, you know, hey, the Bitcoin Google search volume, you know, it's kind of jumped the shark, like you said. People know what Bitcoin is, but I would still think that if there was the retail's interested, I think it's still indication to check, because even just the Bitcoin price today, Bitcoin, so you could see the Bitcoin chart on Google search, like, that would count. So even if they're not searching, what is Bitcoin? I don't understand Bitcoin. Like, yeah, everybody knows what Bitcoin is by now, in the sense of the word Bitcoin, or what, you know, the basics of it, but they'll still be searching for price. And so I think I still believe in the chart of saying, like, people just aren't interested, and we're just slowly climbing, like you said, with the new ETF. And retail's just not there yet.
Yeah. Crazy. Crazy. One other crazy thing that we should definitely talk about, Charles Gasparino, who is a Fox Business analyst, reporter, always has some kind of crazy scoop. I saw he just dropped a scoop right here. We'll just read it out. SEC government, you know, this agency, bracing for major exodus among senior enforcement lawyers in its crypto assets and cyber unit divisions, according to officials at major law firms who have seen several of these resumes floated across their desk, obviously withholding names, all that kind of stuff. But Gary Gensler's controversial leadership isn't really letting up here. So I'm very curious to see how this one plays out. And I've seen a lot of crypto lawyers kind of like boycotting, like, don't hire these SEC lawyers. You know, they've kind of screwed the industry for a long time, and, you know, they might not really, you know, have the best sort of intel and all that kind of stuff. They might not be the right guys for the job. And I think it's maybe a little bit of a chip on these shoulders of some of the lawyers. But on the other hand, I saw other people commenting like, yeah, there's going to be projects that scoop these guys up within 2 or 3 days. Like, they've got, you know, the inside track. They understand how the government works. Like, of course they're going to, you know, kind of come on. But So I don't know. I'm kind of split. I think if you could, you know, convert these guys from the dark side to the light side and get them working for you and understanding the ins and the outs of the agencies, that's probably a net positive for the crypto industry. As opposed to just, you know, holding a grudge. I always say, like, holding a grudge is like taking poison and expecting somebody else to get hurt. It doesn't do you any good. You know, you're just hurting yourself if you're not going to leverage the knowledge and the know-how of these guys. So, and gals. So I'm very curious to see how this shakes out. And I'm sure there's going to be some big, you know, PRS Newswire kind of stuff. All this, you know, kind of people coming out saying, oh yeah, like, you know, I left the SEC and now I'm working at Andreessen Horowitz or, you know, Coinbase or Grayscale or, you know, BlackRock's crypto division. There's going to be a bunch of these sort of PR news things to hit the wire. I just got to be sure of it. You know,
yeah. And you want to build people with relationships, right? So like if you're a senior staff member at the SEC and, you know, you go work for a, you know, established crypto company, it'd be good to have those relationships in the SEC, I would think. So yeah, I agree with you. Get the chips off the shoulder.
Get the chips off the shoulder. It doesn't hurt anybody. Let's take a look at some charts while we're still all here. What do you say?
I'd love to. I'd love to pick your brain.
Okay, cool.
I love when there's my action going on. I'm on our coaching calls. I'm reading the newsletters. You know, I produce all that stuff and distribute it. But before I do, I always take a look at it, especially, you know, like right now when the markets are hot.
You would be a fool not to. In a sense, I mean, we're gonna stop paying you, and you just get the hot tips. Exactly. Okay, cool. Let me pull up some charts here. All right, everybody. So I got my chart pulled up here, and I know there's a lot going on. I'm going to break it down for you. But also, real quick, everybody who's at home listening or whatever, you're at work and you're on Spotify or something where it's just audio, highly recommend you check out our YouTube. Our YouTube link is in the show notes, and you can see these charts that we're going to talk about. So here's an interesting, you know, kind of fundamental slash technical trade idea. I put this out in our channel. And just wanted to, you know, I like teaching everybody how to do TA, technical analysis. And also we do a lot of fundamental analysis. So I always start from a fundamental standpoint, and Synthetics is, one of these, you know, perpetual trading platforms. Full disclosure, I have exposure. Affiliates of mine, you guys know I run a hedge fund. Our hedge fund has exposure. Always want to be clear about that. And this is not investment advice. I'm not telling you to go out and buy it. You guys got to make your own decisions. Okay. But why I like it is from a fundamental standpoint, they just voted to get rid of all of their inflation. And so obviously during this big run-up was kind of the Spartan Council going to vote, saying we're going to get rid of inflation. So that makes this, you know, a little bit, you know, more scarce of an asset when you're not going to be printing, you know, infinite amounts more of it. You have a little bit more definition to what's going to be happening. So anyhow, I put this chart out a few days ago to our channel. I said there's seven reasons why I'm pretty bullish on this outside of the fundamentals. You have this resistance that's now you know, turning into support, right? So you kind of have that principle of polarity where we have the resistance flipped into support. You've got the 200-day moving average, which is right here. You came back, you retested it, found support. You got the volume point of control, which is the most actively traded price point acting as support as well. You had a breakout from it, a retest. You've got this anchored volume-weighted average price from the lows. This is clearly acting as resistance. Resistance and now flipped with the breakout to support. And you got a falling wedge. I mean, this is a classic. I think Charles Bukowski, who's one of these great traders who has a really cool blog, and there's a bunch of different statistics around the probabilities of these breakouts. I think it's like 60 to 70% chance that these end up being bullish patterns. So you're breaking out of a falling wedge. And then you've got declining volume in the pullback. So you had a really big climactic move up. You've got declining volume on the pullback. It means, you know, there's not a ton of sellers pushing prices down. So anyhow, we put the alert out. And very shortly after, you could see this started to actually, you know, break out of that falling wedge and start to move higher. And so we felt pretty vindicated here on this. And we've got much higher price targets for SNX kind of in the near term and obviously the long term. I mean, this thing's at $1 billion market cap. And if it really does become the de facto sort of liquidity protocol for you know, perpetual swaps and futures and derivatives, I mean, $1 billion market cap, you could easily see this 10x without any inflation. So you just have price appreciation. You know, 10x, that's a $10 billion market cap. And that's still tiny compared to what this could actually be. So anyhow, put that out. And then one other chart I wanted to show you here. Okay, so one other coin, again, one letter off, STX, not SNX, but very kind of similar chart if you think about it. You had a midterm resistance at $1.30 from March 2023. You had it again back here in December of 2023. Couldn't get above $1.30 to save our life. Every time you got there, kind of broke down. We finally had a big breakout and a retest. You can see these wicks right here, these shadows. The wicks, whatever you want to call them, they successfully retested $1.30. That was a pretty long-term resistance that's now turned into a support. Now, zooming in, again, we posted this. The price of SNX was $1.61. It's now $2.13. Hit that first target at the highs. And so kind of zooming in here, what do we see? We see a couple things. Number two, we have a breakout above the 20-day and the 50-day moving average, which is right here. You also have a bullish recross of those. So you had the death cross. Now you got another golden cross. So you're in bullish territory. That's pretty, you know, a very good sign. And also the 200-day moving average is way down here. So this trend is way above that long-term trend, which is, you know, an indication of a lot of strength. You also had a breakout of this short-term kind of resistance, this horizontal resistance that had capped price. And you also had this diagonal resistance that was forming, you know, a bit of a bull flag. So once we kind of broke out from that diagonal, broke out from the horizontal, confirmation, right? Boom, all systems go. And not only that, you also had a really great consolidation and breakout from a volume point of control. So, you know, you had confirmation of volume on the breakout. So again, STX from a fundamental standpoint, also these anchored volume weighted average prices from pretty key levels in the past, you know, those all acted as support too. So excited about what's going on there. And from a fundamental standpoint, you know, STX has a big upgrade coming. It's going to make it a lot faster and all that good stuff. But real quick, while we have the charts out, let's take a look at a chart of Bitcoin, just a long-term chart. It had this just nasty falling wedge, kind of broke out of it. And then again, you know, fractals, right? Like the diagonal, the horizontal. Once you break out, it just send the gas. So all of our, you know, kind of resistances have been broken. Now we are fighting a little bit with this resistance from April of 2022, which was kind of the last stand. The bears really held up and then just drove price lower with the credit market liquidation in crypto with Terra and Voyager and BlockFi and Celsius and all that stuff. So we've retraced all of that. It's a good sign. If you kind of throw on a weekly chart, I want to get rid of all this stuff, and I want to just throw on like a MACD. This is a moving average, convergence, divergence. So it's an indicator that shows your momentum, and let's just brighten it up for the folks in back and get that going. And so you could see, you know, momentum here has been rising. Along with sort of the trend, right? The trend and the momentum. This is a custom 20-day, 50-day Elder Impulse system, these colored bars. So you can see that we've got confirmation of a confluence of positive trend, positive momentum. You had, you know, kind of a bullish recross here of momentum above the zero line, right? The zero line is kind of the line in the sand that shows kind of when the MACD is below it, you're kind of in bullish or a bearish territory, and when it's above it, it's bearish. I just botched that. When it's below, it's bearish. When it's above, it's bullish. But you can see that this recross happened above the zero line, which is just a classically bullish signal, and that signaled a breakout here. And then you also saw what, you know, kind of was an attempted bearish crossover that you kind of very similarly above the zero line have something similar like this. So momentum would slow down, it reset, and then you had a breakout. So we got a confirmation of the trend. We got a confirmation of some long-term momentum. This 20-week moving average acted as some very strong support. That volume point of control acted as support. So from a long-term standpoint, Bitcoin's still bullish. You know, this is not showing many signs of slowing down. And Ether as well. Ether's you know, trading very similarly to Bitcoin, almost in lockstep. But the Ethereum ETF is on the horizon. I saw Franklin Templeton just announced that they're launching they filed for an Ethereum ETF, and many of the other issuers of the Bitcoin ETF are all launching the Ethereum ETF pending approval. May 23rd is kind of the deadline that everybody's looking at. ETH has still a long ways to go. Very excited about ETH. Taking a look at ETH BTC, you know, things are still sort of in this stair step down. We haven't broken out. We haven't gotten into a full bullish altcoin sort of season. If you were looking at ETH BTC as a proxy, still in a downtrend, but we've had this this sort of arrow drawn for quite some time, and this green order block basically is still holding up as support. You know, things are neutral here in the altcoin land when priced in terms of Bitcoin. You could also kind of see that as evidence here in the Bitcoin dominance chart. The Bitcoin dominance chart is still rising, meaning Bitcoin's market share is growing faster than the altcoins, which kind of would be expected with the launch of the Bitcoin ETF. But the halving is coming up right here, you know, very soon, less than 60 days, sometime in April. The window consistently shifts based on the mining power, but we should see it sometime here within the month of April. And historically, Bitcoin dominance starts to fall following a halving. So this will be the fourth halving. You can see here was the third halving right here, May of 2020. Bitcoin dominance, you know, fell following the halving. Again, going back to the second halving, Bitcoin dominance took a huge, huge spill after the second halving. So we're just looking at a couple, you know, historical data points. You know, prices for altcoins tend to do really well in this sort of season. So anyhow, that's kind of all the charts that I wanted to share with you guys. TiVo, any kind of, you know, thoughts or feedback on that before we wrap things up?
I feel like we're on the verge, and I know there's a lot of outstanding factors. One of them was CPI came out today. I guess it ran a little hotter than
ran a little
thought.
Hot.
And then there's the argument, you tweeted it yesterday, like the argument of, well, CPI, like people, I know it's like, oh, they take rent the wrong way. And so you got to take rent this way. And if you did this, and I was thinking that I was drinking my coffee this morning, listening to the talking heads on TV. And this is a personal opinion, but like, I swear I've been watching these shows for 2 years now talking about inflation, and the same people that said we need to cut rates today or Jerome Powell's going to crash the economy. Now they're saying, the same person said today is like, they can, you know, high and tight for a little longer. And now I don't know who to believe. And so then we've got CPI data. We got Trueflation, which I know we like. We've had Stefan on before, and he's on our digital currencies, crypto community summit that is airing this week. I just wanted to get your take on that. So having commenting, altcoin dominance in the future, inflation. What are you feeling?
Yeah. So it's a great question. So first off, this is not my my words, but it's Barry Sternlicht, I think is how you say his name. He's this big, what is it called? You know, real estate developer, I guess you could call it. He's not like, he doesn't run REITs, but he runs, you know, a large, you know, real estate development firm, let's call it. I think he owns 125,000 houses or apartments across the world. And he was saying that, you know, this CPI sort of calculation, this algorithm, you know, it's remained kind of unchanged since 1980. So, I mean, this was, you know, years and years before even I was born. And this was before the internet caught storm. This was before, you know, real-time sort of data processing and all this shit, right? I mean, so they're using really, really, really slow, old calculations that is just not real time. And it could, again, as we've seen, cause them to make policy decision errors where they hold rates too low for too long because they're using old data. They think, oh, things are fine. You know, there's nothing to be worried about. And then all of a sudden they get hit like a ton of bricks, you know, because you can't fight reality. Just because you don't see the real-time data doesn't mean the real-time data isn't out there actually existing, actually, you know, pushing market forces, which is like obvious for us to say, but, you know, they're always using a really slow kind of lagging indicator for extra confirmation, to be extra positive. But it's slow. You got to be more adaptive. And so, now with systems like Trueflation, which have, kind of these real-time, really robust calculations, many, many, many more data points, you could see inflation's dropping like a rock. And many smart people out there, analysts, you hear them talk, inflation has been dropping. They call it disinflation. So it's not deflationary, but it's just disinflationary, where price pressure has fallen off because the supply chains have kind of opened back up. But the whole question comes back down to, when is the Fed going to start cutting rates? And at the beginning of the year, everybody was thinking there's going to be, six rate cuts or something. But the Fed was saying there's only going to be about three. So there was that gap between what the market was pricing with these forward futures and stuff on these Fed futures. And then there was the sort of Fed speak saying it's only going to be three. It's going to be back half of the year. And so now there's that sort of narrowing of that gap. And you're seeing a little bit, S&P had its worst day since, all the way since December 2023. So its worst day of the year was on this CPI print that came in a little hot, because it implies that the Fed is going to keep rates higher for longer. They want to be sure, dead sure. Again, they always wait for extra confirmation. They want to be dead sure that inflation is dead in the water and never going to rear his head again. He doesn't want to be Volcker, right? Who saw the kind of the inflation come up, come down, and then come right back up again. So he wants to make sure. And so they're waiting for these slow confirmation, because once they cut, they got to go, right? It's very binary. You cut and then you keep cutting, or you cut, you skip, you cut, you skip, but you never cut and then raise, because then that throws the market for a loop. So they are saying they're not going to be raising. They're kind of at that sort of rate that they want to be at, right? At 5.5 or whatever it is. And they want to be dead sure that once they start cutting, they're going the right direction. So they're just not 100% sure yet. And that's what they're waiting for. They want to make sure that once they go in one direction, they continue along that one direction, because if they don't, that could be even more damaging, because then the market, just completely goes risk off, because they're like, oh my God, the people in charge don't even know what's going on. They're cutting one month, right? They're raising the next month, they're flat the other month, so they want to signal and guide very resolutely. So we'll see. I kind of am in the camp that, real-time data is showing, massive disinflationary pressures, and maybe towards the back half of the year they'll start cutting 25 bips at a time. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. And I'm not the macro sort of expert here. I always like to defer to some other people who run macro specific hedge funds. I'm the crypto guy. But macro always does come to bear on crypto. Because it's tracking liquidity, it's tracking all this kind of stuff. And actually, on that note, one of the guys I really, really always defer to is a guy named Michael Howell from Cross Border Capital, and really, really smart guy. And he's all about global liquidity and tracking just how much is one central bank stimulating how versus all these others, and just kind of giving you this net sort of outlook of global liquidity based on bond market volatility. Because if you think about it, bonds are collateral for central banks to issue more debt against and all that kind of stuff. And so if bonds are volatile, then you could have you need more bonds to collateralize for the same sort of loan, if you will. And so bond volatility has been high, so it kind of makes liquidity less. Now, when bond volatility starts to go down, you could have more liquidity. And so he factors in all these different things. He's not just looking at M2 money supply or, flat interest rates or anything like that. He's calculating lots of different factors. And he's showing that, there's an incredible amounts of liquidity that's coming, that's been coming, that's continuing to come. Like, that trend, that momentum is really strong. So, all that being said, I thought I was going to be done there, but another thought popped into my mind. If you go to my profile on Twitter, I think two of the most recent things I retweeted with some eyeballs looking at, kind of just saying, oh, here's what I'm looking at. There is two kind of indicators there's two kind of indicators that show, like, during election years, this sort of second half of February tends to be really weak. So I would not be surprised to see a market reset in the short term. You could kind of see seasonality is very, very weak during election years, between the 13th of February and the 12th of March. So pretty, you know, worth noting. And I believe there was one more right there from Seth Golden, another guy who I'm always following. I think he's an incredibly smart manager. And he says, we're entering the worst two-week stretch of the year historically for the S&P 500, going back to 1928, I believe this was. Since 1928, you could see that two-week returns. You could see on the far right-hand side, the last two-week stretch here in February, historically, on average, the worst 2 weeks of the year. And you could see right there, worse than September. And you could also see February, the first 2 weeks of February tend to be actually pretty strong. So yeah, I would brace for a little bit of a, you know, short-term sort of correction or whatever. There's uncertainty in the air with who's going to be the next president. You know, the Democrats don't really know who they're going to run, is what I'm hearing. I saw Kamala the other day. It was like, yeah, I'm ready to take the stand. If I have to, if it comes to it, I'll do it. And, you know, there's just all sorts of craziness there. People are saying Michelle Obama, Gavin Newsom, we don't know. And then obviously with the Republican sort of dealio, Trump is kind of the leader there. And so we'll see. But, you know, a lot of things still up in the air with some of these lawsuits and things. So I think, you know, in election years, we just see a lot of uncertainty in the first half. And then as we get closer to that date, you get more certainty, right? I mean, that's how markets work. And so would not be surprised to see a little bit of softening just in the market with the CPI data, with S&P breaking above 5,000 and coming back down below 5,000, just a little bit of chop. But I think any sort of dips, if you see a sharp dip, and if in the next couple of weeks you start to get scared and you start to feel a gut sort of, oh my God, wait, did I make the wrong decision? That's your signal to buy, okay? Like, that is your signal to buy, because if you get a significant dip back down even below $40,000 or something like that, and you start to feel it in your gut, that is the signal, floor it, all right?
Hold your nose and buy it. Not financial advice, never is.
Not financial advice.
Just to wrap up the CPI, I remember that I saw that Barry Sternlicht quote, and he said, if you ran how we do CPI and track CPI, if you ran how we do that, like you ran as a business, as a CEO, you'd be fired.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just sitting here like, dude, we have sentient AI, self-driving cars, and Elon Musk can land a rocket on a penny. He knows where that rocket's going to land on a penny. And we can't track CPI data correctly. Like, that just blows my mind. But we'll,
and there's revisions every other month, and you know, the employment data. I mean, they got their heads up their tushies. It's ridiculous.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
You would be fired if you ran a company the way our government is running us, in a sense. And I think it's about time that we start, pushing back. And you know, at the end of the day, we elected them. They are delegates of us, right? And so, you know, right now, I mean, a lot of this government is overarching, just a little bit of top-down pressure. And I think the people need to take back a little bit of power and remind them that we're in control. The people are in control. Screw the deep state.
Yeah, and I feel like people are doing that with Bitcoin. I mean, obviously, everybody's getting involved now, but it was definitely a retail thing to start.
It's a vote.
We'll end on this. Something fun. We got the
one more before we do this.
One more.
I'm sorry. There's so much that happens. You got to go and watch this clip. It's all these central bankers laughing about how they, and we don't need to show it right now or whatever. You could kind of go in and edit back. But I got to show you guys this clip. It's all these central bankers in a room. They're laughing about how they have the easiest job in the world. They print all this money and people, this one right here. Go ahead and play it. We fund ourselves. your vote, you vote with your wallet, vote with your purse right here, and you know, buy Bitcoin, because these central bankers are laughing at you. They think you're dumb.
We actually fund ourselves and then work out what dividend is needed to pay. So we kind of work, but it's a great business to be in, central banking. Print money and people believe it. And touch wood. So it's a slightly different beast.
I think it's crazy. Yeah, we just need to figure out how much we need to pay ourselves first. We'll print that. People believe it. Yeah, it's a good business, and everybody laughs. It's in some sense a very crooked enterprise, and it does not really have your best interest at heart a lot of the times. And maybe in the early days it did, but I do think that this is fractional reserve and zero reserve banking has become very perverse, and it has just absolutely inflated debt levels beyond what's manageable. And it's been a pretty nutty little moment here in history, but luckily we could opt out. We don't need to be coerced into using one currency that we were born into anymore. We now have a global currency, a borderless, permissionless currency that anybody in the world could use. People could spin up a wallet no matter where you are. You could get money instantly for virtually no cost. And you don't have to incur this hidden tax that we all incur of inflation. So, anyhow, let's see that giant Bitcoin float.
Yes, we had a parade in Carousel, or Carnival.
I've never been to a carnival,
but I've heard they are phenomenal in the Caribbean. So we're in Carousel here, and one of the floats is this, it's just giant Bitcoin float. And I just, just after kind of following up on your speech, like, hey, like the people are embracing it. They're having fun with it, but they're using it. And like, this whole episode was about prices are higher, usage is higher, Google searches are not higher, but the people are still embracing it. We've got a giant Bitcoin float. I'd love to, maybe we could be down at Carnival next year at Carousel and get on the float.
Yes, sir. We a bull market and anything's possible.
That's right. The bull market, anything is possible. All right. That's all I got for today, Mr. Bryce.
Yeah. Appreciate your time, TiVo, as always. And everybody at home watching or listening, again, we have a lot more fun on YouTube. Obviously it's the same show, but we always want to give you guys those visual sort of aids to help along. So if you're listening, on your way to work or whatever, I totally get it. Pop back into YouTube. Check us out. The links are in the show note. We've got a lot of charts, a lot of fun stuff. Helps you get a little bit better grasp on what's occurring in the industry. That's all we got for you today. So appreciate everybody being a good citizen of Crypt Nation. And we'll talk to you guys same time, same place next week.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.